Hey everyone, it's Nicole, and thanks so much for tuning in to episode 2 of Escape Route. This week, we'll talk to aspiring writer Baz Ramish about his process and how he writes from different moods that he is experiencing. Enjoy!
Okay, you're a writer.
Yes.
Why do you write?
It's a good question. Usually it's because I have something that I want to say. It's that simple, really. Just to get to basically clear my head a lot is really what it's weird. So I write. My writing happens in fits and starts. And it's rarely ever when I'm like content or happy or anything like that. I don't really have that gear yet. So it's usually to make sense of what's going on in my life and try to put metaphor to it and try to connect it to experiences that you hope, because it's a lot of times it's bad, but that you think everybody else is having or has had, and it makes you feel a little bit better. So yeah, I guess that's why I write, is to sort of clear my head and make sense of what's going on in my life, and a lot of times that just happens to coincide with, you know, stuff that's frustrating me or sad things.
It's actually the next question. So you're sort of leading us right into it.
Okay.
Are there any specific mental states that affect your writing, or like that you write from mostly, or write better?
Yeah, from? I think it's weird, like I there's like the quote that's on like coasters and fridge magnets and shit. Hemingway, like, write drunk and edit sober. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, it's not like that. Like, I'm not like wasted when I'm writing ever, or rarely ever. but what it is, my ideas are better, and I have many more ideas, and I have better themes and I think deeper characters when I start writing from a place that's really conflicted and really confusing, because it helps to sort of anchor those characters to those things, and you know, but then the writing itself isn't, it sort of always becomes this meandering sort of autobiography that I have to do for myself, but it's to the detriment of the story. So when I edit, it's usually after I've had some distance from it and I'm feeling better about the thing that I wrote about. And then I can say, okay, like, here are the things. And it might be one or two things that I'm just adding to this compendium of ideas and little threads that, you know, who knows when I'll want to pull them one day. But going back and revisiting from a much more clear headspace, I think makes it better. And it's a big part of the editing process for me. So usually when I'm sitting down to start a project, it's from a place that's kind of not always the most positive one.
What strategies do you use to write, creative or otherwise?
Strategies. I don't really have like a playbook or anything like that. I mean, the biggest strategy is really not letting an idea or a concept or even just a combination of words escape me. I mean, that's the biggest strategy I have, and if I'm out and about, I'll jot something on my phone. We were here the other day, and I don't know when, a couple weeks back, and we were about to go do something, and I just had this idea, kind of like when I started writing that treatment for I don't know, these characters that had come to my mind, and I wanted to get that out because I thought there was a real story there that maybe didn't play by the usual tropes of some of the stories you run into.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to get that out, and so it took, what, I think I wrote 4 or 5 pages that morning just on that little simple idea.
And now you've got a start on it.
Now I've got a start on it, yeah. And so...
Have you touched it since?
No, which is something I want to get back to. I have thought about it since. Just been lazy and busy all at once. But, yeah, I mean, as far as strategies go, it's really not letting those ideas escape you and just kind of... Another strategy is that if it does come to you, like, accept it. And it's sort of like yes anding yourself, you know, that improv rule, like
mm-hmm.
yes and, like, don't invalidate your ideas before you've even had a chance to see what they are in the world and make sense of them. And so
I think it's something every artist needs to try to remember.
Yeah, it's so easy to censor yourself, and it's so easy to discredit yourself and really, oh, it's been done before, it's been done a million times over, and, you know, who cares? You, not by you. So let's see what that mm-hmm. looks like. Because, I mean, invariably, it's going to be different somehow or another. And if it does, who cares? If you're stealing, who cares? Like, everything now is homage and pastiche, and it's what you do with it. It's how you execute it. You know, you can do it in a hacky sort of childish way. And maybe that's something that you never show anybody. Who cares? That's the point. But I think the important thing is to at least give it space to breathe and don't invalidate it off the cuff.
Mm-hmm. So I paint.
Mm-hmm. I know this.
And occasionally there are times that I run into creative blocks where I'll go through a period of time where I'm painting for 4 or 5 days straight, a couple hours a day,
mm-hmm.
and then I just stop and I can't do anymore and I don't know where else to go. What do you do when you have those types of creative blocks?
So I'm really bad at this. I mean, I think what a lot of answers will be is, you know, it's just, it's routine. It's something that there's going to be a probably pushback, whatever, but I don't think anybody gets into, like, there's nowhere that it's like, I'll die if I don't write, or I'll stop breathing if I don't write. I mean, I think that's meta. You're speaking in metaphor, obviously. I mean, and I've never felt that way, but I think what they're talking about is primarily routine. Like, there are certain, you know me, like, there are certain parts of my day or my routine that, like, I'm pretty flexible on, but then there's also things where if I don't do it, if I don't take X amount of time to do this thing, then it starts to grate on me. And I think that's mm-hmm. kind of what we're talking about, is making it part of a routine. And, you know,
but you don't do that.
I don't do that. And I'm terrible at it. And I think there is value to that. I mean, I think that is what we're talking about when we say, I'll stop breathing, I can't live if I don't write. I think what we're talking about is that, like, you're just set in your ways and you've done a really good job of making writing a part of your routine, whether that's getting up at 6 in the morning and writing for 2 hours before work, and just having that part of the process. I mean, I think that's critical for creative blocks. Like, it's...
Do you think that's just something you're willing to sort of try or incorporate into your day-to-day? Do you think it would help your mental health if you had that type of routine for your creativity?
Yeah, I think it would. I mean, it's less of the writing itself, or less of constantly having to kind of make sense of my world or find that thing that I want to say. There are times where that is true, and, like, that's when I write best. But, I mean, I think making that part of the routine, you know, as a writer and anybody in creative kind of has to know, you know, unless you figured out the perfect way to, like, kind of monetize yourself, you know, we're all either working day jobs that we kind of hate or, you know, freelancing and trying to make that work.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think in terms of, like, you kind of know in terms of like having something every day that is like, is mine, it is the work that I'm wanting to do and the work that I am choosing to do for myself. Mm-hmm. Instead of making every day, like all these, like 40 hours a week, just this grinding drudgery that like, you go through a day and like, you won't have done anything to advance the things that you actually care about. Like,
that's what drives me crazy. I've been trying very hard over the past probably year or two to make sure that I can incorporate something creative into my everyday, whether it's painting or just reading or, I don't know, looking at a magazine or drawing a picture, just like anything just to get my brain moving in a direction that doesn't make it stasis.
Yeah, and you're way better at that. I mean, at least you're way better at that in making something come to life and following through on it and formalizing it as a process. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're so much better at that than me. You always have been. I mean, as long as you've been caring about painting, you have been. I mean, and I've been terrible at that too. And I've always, and this is going to probably sound like an excuse or whatever. But I've always lost interest like in things when I've had to like put form to it. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like, it always seemed like just that you were that part of it was always for somebody else. And I guess, you know, obviously that's the whole point. Like, art is not a, you know, as much as you want to say it's a one-to-one kind of do it for yourself. I mean, if you're doing it for yourself, like, you know, whatever, like it's going to come through. Like, you have to love what you're doing, but like, you have to like, inevitably, like the viewer is in mind and like, you want to, you're creating art because you want that art to become famous. Like, it can't be the end game, but like, it's definitely there. And like, so, but I'm not saying that I'm any different, but I've always, and it's not just for writing either. I mean, you just put form to it. You kind of have to, when you have to translate it, you know, writing a damn book report, like, always just bum me out. Like, who am I doing this for? Like, I read the book, I had my experience with it. I had this thought, I had this thing. And so I'm getting closer to the point where kind of putting the form to it is just a part of the experience and a part of the challenge and a part of what I ultimately want to set out to do. The way that I sort of, it's weird. Like, so I sort of skirt around it though, because like, in certain ways, I do have the outlet and I do have that writing kind of, I mean, however loosely you want to define writing, like, I'm in like text message threads with some of my friends that served kind of as like, I mean, I consider them a writing notebook as far as like, I mean, especially for like comedy and stuff. Like, I mean, I'll text Dan and Steve and, Dan Rutherford and, you know, all my buddies. We're constantly, like, I mean, constantly trying to entertain each other, constantly thinking up, you know, little skits and bits and scenarios and characters. And, Dan texted us, me and Steve, Dan Montalvo texted Steve and I, about this idea he had where, like, you know, the scene in Parks and Rec where Aubrey Plaza is at the wine tasting and snarling?
Yes.
She's like saying all they taste like dirt and shit and whatever else. So he is like talking about like these like really like kind of well-to-do kind of waspy like middle-aged dudes who are going to this wine tasting, and like they take it seriously and they get through a couple of the notes or whatever, but then it's like that last note of like whatever they're trying to say, like that last little bit of the taste of the wine is always like ends up being some kind of like trauma. So it's like, oh, you know, you get through and it's like, oh, and then that last little note is like that taste of tin I had in my mouth after like my wife left or something. Like, just like some like dark trauma that's like the wine is like triggering in them, and they're like telling these people at this tasting, and it was just like a dumb little thing that we just sort of he floated that, and then Steve and I started rambling off, and we probably shot off 50 texts after this, like going through, and so like that's where it's like I kind of have to remind myself, like, it can take, like, the form is...
So your friends are a big resource for your creative energy.
Yeah, they always have been. I work better when I have somebody to bounce stuff off of and, like, you know, talk through stuff with, you know, with people and characters and situations. But I have to, like, I have to trust them. Like, that's... I struggle with... And this is just also just kind of falling out of habit for myself. But I struggle with, like, people who... Sorry. I struggle with people who don't understand me, or I don't feel like they understand me trying to read my writing. Which is, like, obviously, like, stupid and a thing that every writer fears and has to deal with. Because, sure. Like... You have to, first of all, it's your damn job to make sure that people understand you. And being misunderstood is what you sign up for. And so, but like, you know, when I'm just creating, like, you kind of want just that you want the volley more so than the, you get into the editing where people give you hard stops. This is all wrong. It's like, oh, no, well, let's talk to me about where you think it's going and understand where I'm coming from. And then we'll see, like, don't close the door just because something's like there's a thread missing. Like, we can revisit this. So, some people just approach it and like they think that they want that I'm asking them for this like hard edit when I'm really not at that point. And just it's just maybe a communication thing on my end. But yeah, they're a big resource. I mean, they're my writer. They're my writing my writer's room. You know, if I was like a showrunner or whatever, that's my writer's room. So. But I'm so much better in that space. And it's hard to get there. And I don't have that unless I'm on these text messages or unless I'm, you know, I mean, when I'm around them, it's different too, but yeah, huge, huge resource.
So let's talk about mental health for a second.
Sure.
Do you think the arts and mental health, there's a correlation between the two?
Yeah. And I think anything that we're going to concede, like, kind of comes from the inside out, I think is going to have that connection. And I think people use it for all, you know, I think all different sorts of ways to help their mental health.
I know for me specifically, like, 3 years ago, I felt like I just had this creative block and I couldn't do anything. So I started going to therapy. And if I hadn't gone to therapy, I don't think I would be where I am now, making strides to create things and actually wanting to and finishing things. I 3 years ago was nowhere near that. So I know that personally for me, at least, my mental health is very much intertwined with my creativity.
So is mine. Like, when, you know, having, like, the year that we've had, I've fallen back on texting my friends a lot more, like I said. Like, so this is all sort of, like, ramped up, really. Like, the last year, it's taken much more kind of, like, the turn I was saying, just, like, an actual... It feels sometimes like a writer's room, like, it really does. And that's because I was, like, kind of kicking the can down the road myself and just not having... You know, not having that outlet and finding it there was really nice because, you know, it's most of the writing that we talk about there is comedy writing, but I mean, mental health wise, I mean, it was, you know, that trauma thing. Like, there's so many, you know, you laugh at that because you can relate to it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's not a theory. I'm there not to get into like a theory there, but like, you know, it helps you make sense of your own trauma and laugh at it and, you know, see it kind of. Dramatized and made into the absurd. You know, I had to remind myself of that every so often. You know, I more like, I think for myself, and maybe a lot of people have more of a balance here. When I'm first, like, if I'm struggling with my mental health, mm-hmm. Before I start to sit down or create, before I do anything, like, I actually, like, if I acknowledge and I know that, like, I'm, like, kind of, like, my brain is just circling the wagons, I seek out art first.
What kind of art?
Mostly it'll be, you know, philosophers. I think I'll read a lot of philosophy, especially ones that I think kind of anchor my general perspective. So, mm-hmm. You know, I'll read Camus and I'll read Emerson and even, what's her name? I go back to Henry Miller all the time when I'm feeling like, when I have a bout of discontent and I'm dealing with mental health, it's because I feel like just the entire point of existence is just futile. You know, I think, mm-hmm. you know, I just kind of get lost in the mechanics of our capitalist system. Because I mean, that's the point. They want you to get lost. Like, it's designed to lose. It's designed to make people lose themselves so that they become automatons. And so, when I feel myself drifting into that territory, is when I really start to struggle. Mm-hmm. And that's when people like Henry Miller and Emerson really help. And then to really kind of keep going for the next day, you've got to, I mean, that's where all the absurdists, that's where the Dadaists come in, you know.
Sure.
Is where fucking nothing makes sense. Everything is absurd. So, like, so you can either roll with it and be as absurd and as nonsensical as the world that is reflected back at you, or at least hold that in your heart. Or you can let it crush you, and then, like, I mean, the alternative that you know, if you're weighing those options, I think the choice becomes obvious. So I just, you know, I need a reminder of that a lot. And I mean, a lot of times I'll go back to the same texts because they're the ones that stuck with me through it. You know, even somebody like what's her name? She's like she's an anarchist, Emma Goldman. I think it's who it is. She's great. I mean, it's more political writing, but kind of just in that same vein of just being self-possessed and breaking the system and breaking the you know, all of that stuff. I don't have the catalog of artists like painters or anything like that that I can kind of call on like you can.
You use music too.
I use music for sure. Yeah, music is a big one.
And I think you probably also use the podcast that you listen to as well.
Yeah, they're an escape, and I mean, it's sort of like you feel like you're in the conversation. Mm-hmm. If that is a modern art form, I think, and to a degree, and
absolutely,
the way these guys do, you know, some of my favorites the way they do it definitely is too. So I mean, yeah, that is. You know, though it's the podcast where the escape comes from. It's kind of like, I don't want to think critically about the things right now. I want to kind of get out of that thought process and just kind of take something in very passively. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's, I always seek it out first before I can even begin to put something else into the world. I need those inputs to really get centered again. I mean, musically, I don't know. It depends. Like, you know, it covers the whole gamut. Where if I'm feeling really good and kind of happy with the world, then I might throw on some Chance the Rapper, you know, and more rap, you know. That's when, like, if I'm feeling just, like, real funky and just, like, that's when, like, ODB might come on, too. You know, but then, like, you know, if I'm down in the dumps, it could go any direction, you know. Maybe I'm going back to the emo of my high school days. I've actually been, like, seeking out weird, like, folk punk bands that, like, disbanded in the, like, early 2000s, too, and it's been interesting kind of seeing where...
That's a genre I know a lot about.
Folk punk? Yeah, yeah. No, it kind of hits some good notes, too. It bridges that gap between just, like, that like, emo sort of kind of tug at my heartstrings, and then also, like, this whole fuck-it attitude that I kind of need every so often. So...
Gotcha.
Yeah, but, I mean, I definitely, like, it's... If I'm going through something, I seek out art more than I ever try to create it.
But I think I have one more question for you.
Okay.
Do you use writing as a form of self-care?
I never really thought about it in those terms.
Or do you think they're related to each other?
Yeah, I think they're related to each other. I think... So, I mean, just in being very honest, like... I think, like, making – it would contribute to self-care. But the reason that I haven't, like – lately I've been kind of neglectful of my writing. And not lately, like, the last however long. But is because also, like, paradoxically, self-care hasn't been a priority of mine.
Mm-hmm.
So then because of that, then the writing has fallen by the wayside. And
– sure.
And so if I were to, like, make capital S, capital C, self-care, like, my mission, I think writing would become a much bigger part of my everything. Like, much bigger, much more regular. It's got its big kind of...
It just goes back to that routine that we were talking
about. It's the routine. It really comes down to the routine and, like, and not just the routine. Because I feel like, to a degree, like, you know, most days it does... I mean, if I really were to add up the time I spent sending jokes and all this bullshit to my friends, I mean, it would come out to almost probably 2 hours a day. Mm-hmm. between the different ways. Like, I mean, I think, you know, think about what you're talking about. I think conversation can be a form of writing. It's not, you're not putting
sure.
it. But, and so, in the ways that we do talk, it does equate to that often. But yeah, putting form to it and making it, like, formalizing the routine and just making it this, you know, you don't eat unless you fucking write 4 pages today, you know, or 1,200 words. Like,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's tough because what you're talking about is, like, writing or sleeping. And when you're just caught up in the day-to-day, sleeping is going to seem real, real nice.
Oh, that's my choice all the time.
I mean, especially, yeah, it's always, and well, especially because, like, I mean, part of my job is still to write. Like, I have to write every day. Like, I have to, but it's nothing I give any fucks about at all. Like, that's, I mean, that's part of the problem. It's like, I feel no, like,
connection
to the writing. I feel no moral obligation to the writing. I feel like, I mean, that's ultimately because I'm, like, not writing as myself. I'm writing as some rich person who craves significance, mm-hmm. Even though they already have everything they could ever want, you know, the one thing they don't have is significance, and I'm there just wanting to be left alone, having to, like, you know, figure out what to say for them. So, I mean, it's that makes it harder too, is writing still is sort of this job, but it's like a job that I feel no connection to aside from it subsidizes the rest of my life. So
mm-hmm.
that's part of the struggle for sure. And also a huge rationalization on my part. Oh, I'm going to write all day. I don't want to write now. But it's like, okay, yeah, you wrote all day, but what the hell did you write? You wrote fucking 500 words on some kind of extended corporate metaphor that no one in their right mind could possibly care about. at least any right mind that I would care to know.
Sure.
Like, sorry if you do care about those things, but I just can't. I mean, there's only so many ways you can tell people to, like, take less money but work harder, you know? It's not, it's, that one's gonna wither on the vine real fast. And I also feel like kind of morally, you know, conflicted about writing like that, because it's like such a waste of time and talent, and it just adds noise to like an already noisy echo sphere, like an ecosystem that's already just super noisy and dumb, and like none of the right things and none of the good things make it through, at least in any consequential way, I feel like. And so, I mean, part of me does feel like I need to write something that matters just because, just to counterbalance all the horse shit that I'm putting out into the world for money. Mm-hmm. But that's not a good motivator. You have to, you know, you have to have it something more.
It has to mean something.
Got to mean something. Got to mean something beyond evening the score. Balancing the scales, you know, I think fundamentally it can't be a response from something, like, it can't just be a direct response from something outside without like it passing through all your internal filters and stuff. I mean, you know, otherwise you're just going to get into screaming matches. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think inevitably, like, you're responding to things that happen to you, but it's more in ways that you've internalized and that are informed by your prior experience and stuff like that. So,
gotcha. Do you have any questions for me?
No, I mean, was this?
This is what I needed.
All right, cool.
Thank you.
No, I don't think so. This is a good project.
All right. Well, thank you very much, sir.
Thanks for chatting, Cole.
Thanks so much for tuning into episode 2, I Feel Better with Boz Ramish. I want to take this time to remind you that we are utilizing this podcast to help gather donations for Scottish mental health charity Tiny Changes. You can find out more information about the charity on my website at escaperootpodcast.net or on our Patreon page. Just look up Escape Route. Or you can donate to the charity directly at maketinychanges.co.uk. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you in episode 3.